Bleak Beach. On Monday morning, Oscar woke up at his usual time, brushed his teeth, washed his face, got dressed in the pale half light of morning, then dutifully followed Bilious to the umbrella shop for his first day as an official apprentice. The rest of the night market had passed without incident. If you could ever call finding Eunice's tent, or the entire section of the others, a non-incident. To Oscar, it had felt deeply unsettling. After his conversation with the Farsouthian woman who claimed to have never heard of the others before, he worked up the courage to ask Innes, who studied Oscar, before he said, "I simply can't recall. I simply can't recall." Oscar had known, just known, Innes had been lying. But why? Why would he have lied about something like that? Was the other Farsouthian woman lying too? He asked Pietra about it as they walked together to find a snack on Saturday night, and she, at least, looked entirely truthful when she said she'd never heard of anything like it. "But they hand out maps at the main entrance," she said helpfully, that waited for him as he sprinted to get one. There was not so much as a whisper of the others on the map, but Oscar knew he hadn't made it up. Eunice had been real. Her brother Garner had been real. The whole thing was just weird. Bilious unlocked the shop when they arrived and put Oscar to work immediately, measuring and cutting fabric for canopies. Everything was done by hand at Buckle Umbrellas, and as a result, the process went rather slowly. By lunchtime, Oscar had only managed to cut out one half of one canopy. His eyes hurt, his fingers hurt, his brain hurt, and it wasn't even sure he'd done that good of a job. "My lines are all crooked," he complained to Bilious. Bilious pressed his fingers against the edge of the canopy, then tucked the fabric under itself. "This will get sewn here," he explained, "so any imperfections won't show, and they won't impact the function of the umbrella." "So you agree it's imperfect?" Oscar grumbled. "Oscar, you've been my apprentice for 3 hours. Give yourself some time to learn." Bilious took a long look at his son, then added, "That's about enough for today, I think. We'll do half days this week to ease you into everything. Sound good?" Oscar nodded eagerly. "Thanks, Dad." He pushed out the bligoting. It hasn't bligoted in a while, so a reminder this is quite a lot of rain and particularly unexpected. Rain before Bilious could change his mind. Oscar had a sandwich in the pocket of his coat and even thought it was raining quite a bit. He decided to go and eat at Bleak Beach. The beach was bound to be deserted in this weather, and Oscar just wanted to be alone. He hadn't seen or heard from Sage after she hadn't shown up at the Ferris wheel. Was Eunice right? Was Sage ashamed? What did she have to be ashamed about? None of this was her fault, Eunice had said. None of what? Moving to Roan Pierce? Of course Oscar was sad that Sage had moved, but he didn't blame her. That wouldn't make any sense. It wasn't her decision to move. Maybe she hadn't shown up at the Ferris wheel because she'd figured out what Oscar already knew. People who lived in Roan Pierce just weren't friends with people who lived in the alley. Maybe she decided not to come because she could feel, like he could, that their friendship was doomed. Oscar groaned. He didn't want to think about Sage anymore. He wished he could turn his brain off for the rest of the day, just for a bit of a break. He made it to the beach in about 20 minutes. The bligot had let up a little, but Oscar was still thoroughly soaked as he took a seat on a bench at the edge of the sand. He removed the sandwich from his pocket and took a bite of the waterlogged bread. He felt miserable. He tried to go into his first day of the apprenticeship with an open mind. He really had, but all his feelings of goodwill had seemed to vanish when Bilious handed him the measuring stick, the pencil, and the overlarge pair of scissors. And things had only gotten worse from there. Oscar finished the sandwich quickly, tucked the wrapping back into his pocket, and examined his hands. They were red and sore and covered in small cuts. How was it he could whittle an entire elephant without so much as a scratch? But give him a pair of scissors and he'd manage to massacre his fingers. He put his hand into his other pocket and felt his fingers close around a block of smooth, solid wood. The monk wood. He'd been carrying it around with him since the first evening of the night market. He liked the weight of it in his pocket, and it might have been his imagination, but he felt sometimes like it hummed. A soft, gentle hum that felt comforting against his fingers. He hadn't decided what to carve. It felt daunting figuring out what to make with something so special. Every time he thought he decided on something, he changed his mind almost instantly. But there was no rush. He withdrew his hand from his pocket, stood up, and walked across the sand. Since it rained so much, the sand was pretty much always wet and as a result solid and firm. Oscar felt a lonely pair of footprints behind him as he walked down the edge of the gray water of the gray sea. Out in the bay, he could just make out the outline of Gray Lighthouse. Its beam had been dark for years. It no longer rotated or helped or to guide any sailors home. To be fair, there hadn't been sailors in ages. The gray sea was notoriously treacherous to navigate. Where the factories were now in the western part of the tow, used to be a bustling port with ships docking every hour to deliver their trades and wares. But the weather had turned, and too many ships had gone down in the dark waters, and no sailor now dared to travel this way. All trade came in from the north overland. It passed through Commerce City and Roan Pierce, and whatever was left over eventually made its way to the tow. Behind him, Oscar heard the rumbling engine of the bus that stopped at Bleak Beach 5 times a day. He heard its door open, and he wondered idly who else would want to come to the beach on a day like today. The clouds were heavy above him. No doubt it would caterwail. We mentioned this a while ago, but just in case you've forgotten, a caterwail is a summer thunderstorm. Later. He ought to get home before it did, or else Bilious would inevitably worry. As if a little rain ever hurt anybody. Oscar heard the bus pull away from the curb, grunting as it got back up to speed and continued on its endless loop of the tow. He turned around to see who'd been foolish enough to come to Bleak Beach in this weather, and his breath caught in his throat as he saw... Sage? She wore a new raincoat and matching rain boots, both of them a bright Kelly green that stood out in stark contrast to the gray of the landscape. She had her hood up. Dodd had a custom-made attachment that held her umbrella over her head. It was a spillin, and a spillin is a steady shower, from buckle umbrellas. She smiled shyly when their eyes met. There was a concrete boardwalk that extended all the way to the water, and she made her way over to it so she didn't have to put her wheelchair in the sand. When she and Oscar were just a couple feet away from each other, she said, "Hi. How did you... What are you... Your dad told me you were done for the day," Sage explained. "I just guessed you might be here." "What are you doing in the tow?" "My parents had a few last things to pick up from the apartment," she said. "I only have a little while. I wanted to apologize for Friday night." "Oh, it's okay," Oscar said. "It's no big deal." "It is a big deal," she insisted. "I told you I would be there, and I didn't show up. I'm sorry. There's..." She paused and took a deep breath, steadying herself. "There's something I want to tell you, Oscar. Something I only just found out. The reason why we moved. But I don't know... I don't know how to tell you. I'm scared you're going to... Well, I'm scared you're not going to want to be friends with me anymore." Oscar had heard Eunice's voice in his mind. "None of this is her fault." "You can tell me anything," he said. "I promise I won't get mad. Will you come and stay with us for your birthday? We can pick you up and you can spend the night at our new house. Will you just promise me that and then I'll tell you?" Oscar's stomach twisted uncomfortably. It was coming true, exactly what Eunice had said would happen. "Of course," he said. His voice sounded like a stranger's. He didn't quite recognize himself. Sage looked like she was about to cry. "I didn't know before," she said. "I promise. I only found out on Friday. He told me right before the night market." "Sage, whatever it is, it's okay. We're friends. Nothing can change that." Sage nodded, her eyes welling up with tears. "The job my dad got. The reason we moved to Roan Pierce. He took a position with Braun Industries. He's their new chief engineer. I just feel so sick about it all. He should have told me before." Oscar couldn't speak. Whatever he might have been expecting Sage to say, this was certainly not it. Braun Industries, of course, made Braun umbrellas. And Braun umbrellas were the reason Buckle Umbrellas was almost out of business. Braun umbrellas were the reason Oscar couldn't go back to school in the fall. Braun umbrellas were the reason Oscar had to do this apprenticeship. Braun umbrellas had ruined his entire life. But still, Eunice had been right. None of this had anything to do with Sage. None of it was her fault at all. Oscar tried to remember that. Sage was crying openly now, tears running down her cheeks as the sky gave a dramatic rumble overhead. The caterwail was coming. The bus wouldn't be back for another hour or so. They'd have to make it to the alley on their own. Oscar took Sage's free hand. "It's okay," he said. "I understand." "I'm so sorry, Oscar," she said. "My father wasn't even going to tell me. I went into his office in the new house and I saw this manual. These weird plans, and there were sketches of umbrellas everywhere, and... He got really mad at me for snooping, and he told me he didn't have a choice. What else could I have done?" he said. "A job is a job." "Sage, really," Oscar insisted. "This has nothing to do with us. I mean, yeah, I wish you'd met me at the night market, because I probably wouldn't have almost gotten my butt kicked by Gregory and Tim." Gregory and Tim were there?" Sage asked just as a massive flash of lightning streaked across the sky. "We better head back," Oscar said as they both looked up. Sage turned Dot around, and Oscar gripped the wheelchair's handles, helping Sage move back up the sandy boardwalk. Once they'd crossed the street and reached Piteous Park, they went side by side, Oscar with one hand sometimes resting on Dot, sometimes not. They didn't talk until they reached the northern end of the park and the first building of the alley came into view. The heavier rain was hanging above them. They could both feel it, just as every person born and raised in the alley could feel it. You learn to sense the rain above you, envisioning it as if the sky itself were a water balloon ready to burst at any moment. Something Pietra said came back to Oscar then, when they'd been walking through the night market to get her... Oct spectroscope. "Don't think it's weird that the weather here got really bad as soon as Braun started making umbrellas?" Oscar glanced quickly over at Sage, who looked as miserable as he felt. They pushed into the alley just as a truly enormous crash of thunder echoed overhead. Oscar was glad for the noise. It meant he didn't have to think of anything to say. Apprenticeship. There were 2 weeks until Oscar's birthday and his sleepover with Sage. 2 weeks in which time did that weird, sometimes fast, sometimes slow thing again. Apprenticeship. There were 2 weeks until Oscar's birthday and his sleepover with Sage. 2 weeks in which time did that weird, sometimes fast, sometimes slow thing again. Like the time he spent in the shop passed excruciatingly slowly. And whenever he wasn't in the shop, time zipped by, faster than a drop of rain in a blender wheel. It wasn't that Oscar really minded working at the shop that much, especially during the first week when he'd had the afternoons off. He liked the quiet of the workspace, the gentleness with which Bilious moved about the shop, the patience he used whenever he showed Oscar a new task. Oscar had always enjoyed being with his father. He thought it might be because his father was the only parent he had. He often wondered what it would have been like if his mother hadn't died. What would she be like? What sort of relationship would they have? "Oscar, you're dripping glue," Bilious said on Tuesday afternoon. It was only Oscar's second day of full shifts, and he was having trouble keeping his mind from wandering. He stifled a yawn and looked down at his workspace. Bilious was right, of course. He had dripped glue everywhere. He took a small rag, dipped it carefully into a container of paint thinner, and wiped the excess glue from the Wib he was currently assembling. It made him think of Wib, the dog. Last week he'd been able to work on his carvings during the afternoons. Yesterday, after his last full day at the shop, he'd been too exhausted to carve anything. He had a feeling today would be the same. Oscar finished wiping up the glue and set the rag to the side. The Wib was almost finished. The canopy was completed and open on the workbench in front of him, and Oscar was currently working on gluing the handle together. It would need to dry for a full day before the separate pieces could be assembled. "You did a good job with that," Bilious said, coming over to examine the work more closely. "Let's get it in the vise and tighten it up. Then maybe we could take a little walk together, get some fresh air." It hadn't been too rainy of a day. It was currently only flinnering. A flinner is a rain that doesn't appear to really want to fall at all. It is sort of a hesitant, reluctant, mediocre drizzle. "Fresh air sounds great," Oscar said. So Bilious showed him how to set the handle into the vise, tightening the crank until the two glued together pieces were fit snugly against each other. Then they turned the open sign to closed and headed outside. Bilious didn't even bring an umbrella, and of course, Oscar didn't have one to bring. They made their way to East Market, which was busy with people taking advantage of the fair weather. Nico was working and tossed them a shooting star fruit. "I don't actually love these," Oscar whispered to Bilious. "Me either," Bilious admitted, "but I know someone who does." And that's how they ended up trading their two shooting star fruits for two steaming cups of hot chocolate from Mrs. Flanders, who practically squealed with delight over the fruit. "My favorite," she announced. "Nico would understand," Bilious said as he took his first sip of the hot chocolate. Then with a wink, he added, "but we're not going to tell him." They ambled slowly around the alley, not headed in any particular direction. They paused on the far side of Finch and looked west across the tow to where the factories were. The smoke they belched into the sky looked particularly gray and dreary today. "So," Bilious said, "how are you liking being my apprentice?" Oscar had sort of known this conversation was coming, and he didn't exactly know how to answer. The truth was somewhere along the lines of, "It's fine, Dad. It's not the most miserable thing in the world. But I don't want to be an umbrella maker, and to be honest, I wouldn't want to work in the shop ever again if I didn't have to." But he didn't want to hurt Bilious's feelings, because the truth was, he understood. Bilious didn't want to force Oscar into the family trade, but he had to. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to pay the bills, even though the money from the mysterious Far Southian had taken a bit of the immediate pressure off. Those skiffs wouldn't last forever. So Oscar settled for the easiest answer. "It's good, Dad, really good." He watched as Bilious exhaled a sigh of relief, and he felt relief himself, because the last thing he ever wanted to do was give Bilious more stress. Roan Pierce. The rest of the day passed slowly. Oscar was exhausted by the time he got home in the evenings. He didn't have the energy to work on any of his carvings, and he still hadn't touched the block of monkwood. But he kept carrying it around in his pocket, hoping the perfect carving inspiration would hit if he kept it close to him. He didn't visit Fort Clever Buckle, should he rename it anyway, to Fort Buckle. In short, he was tired and depressed, and he didn't have any idea what he could do about it. He was stuck in an apprenticeship he didn't want, in a routine he didn't want, in a loop he didn't want, in a life he didn't want. And he didn't have any choice in the matter. All he could do was continue on helping his father make his umbrellas, even when six straight days passed without a single sale. It all would have been different if Sage and her family still lived in the apartment across from his. Whoever had moved into her old bedroom had painted the walls a truly awful shade of green. Sage's walls had been robin's egg blue. They'd hung terrible curtains with polka dots. They stayed up far too late. Their lamp shot directly into Oscar's bedroom. It started keeping his curtains closed. You might think that the visit to Roan Pierce and Sage's new house would have been a bright spot to look forward to, but Oscar had almost canceled at least 15 times in 2 weeks. There was a knot of dread in the pit of his stomach that only grew larger and larger as the days passed. And then it was Saturday, and Oscar's birthday was the next day. And it was too late to cancel. So he packed his overnight bag and waited in front of Dove for Sage and her family to pick him up. Which they did, right on time, in a brand new, jet black, very fancy, very big car, large enough for the hydraulic lift on the right side, and a third row where Sage's wheelchair fit perfectly. There was a little rise in the roof, so she had plenty of headroom, and the best part was that she could get in and out without any help. She demonstrated this to him when they reached the house in Roan Pierce, though Oscar was having a difficult time concentrating on her, as he tried to also take in their surroundings. He had never been to Roan Pierce before, and he was unprepared for just how perfect everything was. Sage's new house was shaped like a big box with pristine white siding, black shutters, a spotless black roof, a crimson front door, a matching crimson mailbox, a jet black driveway, a buzz ball, a game much like basketball, except the ball vibrates in your hands, making it incredibly hard to maneuver. Hoops set over the garage doors, and two flawlessly manicured flower beds, so perfect they almost looked fake. The sky above the house was a pale light blue. There were white puffy clouds floating overhead, and the sun was shining down on them. It had been roaring in the alley. It had been roaring for 2 days straight, actually. But as soon as they'd passed the wall, the clouds had started to dissipate. Oscar found that troubling, to say the least. Behind him, Sage let out a huff of air and said, "Were you not even looking?" "Sorry," Oscar said, turning around quickly. "Sorry, I've never played buzzball." That was true. But he'd also never wanted to play buzzball, and Sage, of course, knew that and gave him a withering look as she pressed the button to fold the hydraulic lift back into the car. "Come on," she said, "I'll give you the tour." The inside of the Cleverer's new house was just as impressive as the outside. For one, everything smelled new. There was a pleasant mixture of paint and wood and fresh carpet as Oscar stepped inside. Mr. Cleverer had already retreated somewhere, but Mrs. Cleverer was getting a snack plate together as the baby, Arthur, banged happily on the tray of his high chair. The downstairs was large and open, with big, airy ceilings and wood paneling on the walls. Sage led Oscar through the kitchen, the living room. Back in the alley, Sage had owned a small keyboard, but here in the living room was a massive grand piano. The dining room, a bathroom, a sitting room, with a phone. The average household in the alley didn't have a phone, although each building did have a shared phone in the lobby that sometimes worked and sometimes didn't. Sage gave Oscar her phone number now, and he memorized it. 1024. Lined with bookcases, and back to the front foyer. They had passed one single shut door. "What's in there?" Oscar asked, struggling to keep his voice casual. "Oh, that's my dad's office," Sage said, shrugging. Then lowering her voice, she added, "Definitely am not allowed in there, back in there." "Sage, honey, take this up to your room. I'm sure Oscar's famished," Mrs. Clever called from the kitchen. Oscar was actually quite hungry, but he didn't like the way Mrs. Clever had said that. It made him feel weird. Why would she assume he was hungry? Why wouldn't she have asked him instead? Sage returned with a plate of food and handed it to Oscar as she maneuvered Dot onto a platform at the bottom of the wide sweeping staircase. She shut herself in by closing a sturdy metal bar, then pressed a button, and Oscar watched as the platform moved quickly upstairs. "Wow," he said, "that's so cool, Sage." He followed her upstairs, shoving a cracker into his mouth. The upstairs of the Cleverer's house consisted of Sage's bedroom, Arthur's bedroom, Mr. and Mrs. Cleverer's bedroom, and another big bathroom with a tub in it. The door to Sage's bedroom was closed, and she made sure Oscar was looking before she pushed it open gently. Oscar stepped inside, and he couldn't help it. He actually gasped. "I know," Sage said from behind him. "Isn't it so cool?" To say it was cool was the understatement of the year. It was exactly the sort of bedroom Oscar would have dreamed up for Sage. There was a massive drafting table in one corner, art supplies everywhere, two huge windows that took up much of the far wall, a complicated bunk bed with another hydraulic lift built into it, and a closet wide enough for her wheelchair. The walls of the room were painted the same robin's egg blue as her bedroom in the alley, except for one corner, which had been painted to look like an actual forest at night. There were brown trees rising up out of the carpet and dots of yellow fireflies swirling around a midnight blue sky. There was even an actual tent set up there, and two overstuffed beanbags in front of it. Sage saw Oscar staring and said, "I told him I wanted a fort. I know it's not the same as Fort Cleverbuckle, but it's nice to be able to pretend." Oscar went and peeked into the tent. It was filled with comic books. He straightened and turned around. Sage, this is officially the coolest room I've ever seen. I never wanted to leave the alley, you know, she said. But this isn't so bad, right? Not bad at all, Oscar agreed, and he sat down on one of the beanbags, and Sage came over to join him. They made quick work of the snack tray. Then Sage pointed Oscar over to a bookcase stuffed with different board games. He chose one based on a popular comic, and they spent the next hour lost in the game. Eventually, Mrs. Clever stuck her head into the bedroom and suggested they get outside for some fresh air. I'm sure Oscar wouldn't mind getting a bit of sunshine while he can, she said, and although her voice was light and airy, it gave Oscar the same weird feeling he'd gotten downstairs. There was just something in her voice that made him think she felt guilty, but also she wasn't wrong. Oscar did want to spend some time outside. They decided to explore the neighborhood. Oscar wasn't surprised to find that each house was just as big and impressive as the Cleverers. The lawns were neatly manicured, the flowers were bright and healthy, the trees were green and full, and, of course, the sky was still blue. There wasn't a hint of rain in the air. Sage, Oscar said, don't you find it weird that it's not raining here? But when you came to pick me up, it was roaring, Sage finished. I know. Ask my parents about it. They say it's because of some weird geographical anomaly. Something about the sea level of Roan Pierce and the way the harbor is shaped. Yeah, Oscar said slowly. I've heard the same thing before. It's just weird because they're really quite close, you know? The alley and Roan Pierce, I mean, just a couple of miles. Sage shrugged. I don't understand it. Oscar didn't understand it either. And a few weeks ago, he might have accepted the existence of a geographical anomaly without questioning it at all. But now something just felt a little fishy to him. And although he knew it was wrong, although he knew it was the deepest invasion of privacy he could possibly think of, he knew he had to get into Mr. Cleverer's study. That was obviously the locked door Eunice had mentioned. He had a feeling he'd find something interesting in there.